Continue back. If you want to open to Colossians, that's where we'll be again tonight. And we'll be back talking here about in the midst of how we live in the world, as we said, and as we've been looking at in the book of Colossians in the section we're in, is as I said last week, where we looked at the wife and the husband and the man and the woman. Is as far as the home life and the family life and how we live in the world, putting on the new clothes that we're given and what was going through as we went earlier in chapter 3. Well, now we're going to be living in the world here and what God has placed us in the workplace, in the home, with our parent as parents, and then the children, employers, and employees as we go through the rest of this in the book of Colossians. Why don't we start with Colossians 3, and I'll read through this as a reminder again. And we'll start with 3:18, and I'll read through chapter 4, verse 1. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons. Masters, give unto your servants that which is just and equal, knowing that ye also have a master in heaven. And that's the context of the verses. We'd covered through verse 19 last week, where we had husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them, is where we stopped. And I was going to pick up, and where we're going to start tonight is with the children, as far as in the home. And putting on this, and it is in verse 18, or verse 20, I'm sorry, children, obey your parents. And let's go back and read Ephesians 6:1 just as a reminder of where we were. There are parallel passages here in Ephesians from Colossians. And here it's Ephesians 6:1. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. However, the first thing that we have to look at in the sequence of things is that it has to be right between the husband and wife. Is for the children to follow on. And so you have a starting relationship where you have the children here is really identified as generally, it doesn't really respond to a certain specific age group. And the children it's referring to in verse 20, the word that's used is more general in term and not specific to an age. So really it could be any child that lives under the guidance and rule of those that in the home that they're in. And under the parental guidance yet is what it's referring to, where the responsibility is still within the presence of the parents that they're with. And that parental guidance, that they're under that rule. And the thing that we see here in 20 as far as obey is the fact that it's being obedience. It's a continuous obedience. It's not something that they started or stopped. It's something they do on a continual basis as far as children, obey your parents in all things. It's very straightforward in how it's put. That there's a continued expected obedience to the parents, that they honor and obey the parents. And that the child who does not learn to obey the parents, you know, it's really, it shows that it might be a breakdown in home as far as the authority structure that they're in. And it really is just, as I covered last week, is just a breakdown of the home life. It's a reality in the world we live in. And it's the people that we're ministering to. That's who we minister to and ministering to their needs. And that's the needs of the day. So we have to be cognizant of the fact that these are the people that we need to be reaching out to and ministering to them on a regular basis as far as to the children and the life that they're living to the world around us. And that, you know, they really is the fact of the parents and sitting under the authority of the parents and that exercise of that authority. Now, I just want to go back here and just the seriousness of the fact of children obeying parents. And just cover a few things in the Old Testament as far as how things were taken, as far as, and I'm not saying it applies today, because as we read through these, you'll know it doesn't, but it does show in under the law in living the seriousness of this. And as we know, if we go back to Exodus 20, it's very obvious back in the Ten Commandments in verse 12, It says, honor thy father and thy mother, and that the days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. We know it's listed in the Ten Commandments as far as honoring the father and the mother. And if we go over to Exodus 21, is the next thing we see here is in verses 15 through 17 of Exodus 21. And he that smiteth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. And he that stealeth a man and selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. And he that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. We see it here again as far as the things that a child can act out in striking, cursing, or whatever else here as far as against their parents resulted in death. Now again, this is the Old Testament law as far as the rules that were set forth. Let's go over to Leviticus. In Leviticus chapter 20, we have verse 9. For everyone that curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He hath cursed his father or his mother, his blood shall be upon him. Again, it's specific to both parents, the father and the mother, as far as the curse. As curseth his father or mother shall surely be put to death, and that the blood shall be upon him. Again, it's just showing a continual disobedience to the word and the seriousness of what God was placing in the authority of Scripture, the parents over the home life and over the children. And let's go over to Deuteronomy 21. In Deuteronomy 21 and 18 through 21 of 21, yeah, verses 18 through 21 of Deuteronomy chapter 21. And we have here, if a man have a stubborn or rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that, when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones, that he die. So shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Again, in the Old Testament, on not the lack of continual or the continuation or continual disobedience and lack of obedience is punishable by death, is what we see here in the Old Testament. And we see from things of striking, cursing, or not listening to the instructions of what the parents would lay out for them to see. Well, let's go into the book of Proverbs and just look at a number of verses here. Just to want to expand on this as far as what verses we find in here in the book of Proverbs as far as highlighting the fact of the parental type relationship over a son or daughter. And we'll start in Proverbs 1:8. And looking at Proverbs 1:8, it says, my son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Again, putting there that you should be listening to and obeying, not forsaking what they say, not turning them off. So we see very clearly in the book of Proverbs as far as the parental relationship, and it says father or mother, is that they lay down the law, and they should be listened to. Let's go over to 3:1 of Proverbs. And it says, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. Again, remembering what was said and what was laid down as instruction, but also obeying it. So the first one we see here is to hear it and not forsake it, not disregard it. And then secondly here, we see the fact that you're supposed to be remembering those things that are given by parents and obeying them. And let's go over to chapter 4 of Proverbs. In chapter 4, verses 1 to 4, it says, hear ye, children, the instruction of a father, and tend to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine. Forsake ye not my law, for I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also, and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. And again, hear and receive the instruction. Be open to hearing and receiving as a child, or as a that relationship between parents and children, is they should be open to hearing and receiving those things that are said. And let's go over to chapter 7 of Proverbs, and we'll read verses 1 to 3. My son, keep my words, and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments, and live, and my law is the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. And again, to keep and lay them up, treasure them in your heart, is what's said here. And even to write them out to remember, to help their memory, is to rewrite things as far as one of the learning skills that you have. Is not just to listen and hear, but if you write it out on what is heard, it also helps the learning process. So to keep and lay up those things in your heart. Let's go over to 10, chapter 10 of Proverbs, and verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Again, just contrasting the wise and the foolish in Scripture, that the wise are what we see here is maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviest of his mother. That there is a contrast of gladness being resulting out of the wise child versus the foolish. Let's go over to chapter 17 of Proverbs. In chapter 17 and verse 21, it says, he that begotteth a fool doeth it for sorrow, and his father of a fool hath no joy. Again, the sorrow that it brings to have a child that does not is not in obedience or listening and forsaking what is heard. So here it just stresses the fact that of what is there as far as one who responds in a foolish fashion brings sorrow to the heart. And if we go over to verse chapter 19, and verses 13. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. But here again, a foolish son is the calamity of his father. It's the shame that it brings. And let's drop down to verse 26 of 19. And it says, he that wasteth his father and chasteth away his mother is a son that causes shame and bringeth reproach. Again, the seriousness of this and how it's viewed and what it reflects on the parents in the home as far as the results that come out in the child's life and how that brings and reflects on the family and the upbringing. And let's go over here to chapter 28 of Proverbs. In chapter 28 and verse 24, whoso robbeth his father or his mother and saith, it is no transgressions, the same is the companion of a destroyer. Again, is the honor and not lie. Here it's talking about somebody that even robbeth and say it's no transgression and lie about it, is the fact that the same is the companion of a destroyer, is how the seriousness of what it means of a child that lies about the what he might have committed against his parents. And let's go back now to chapter 6 of 20. Chapter 6 of Proverbs and verse 20 as a final one here in Proverbs. In chapter 6, verse 20, it says, My son, keep thy father's commandments and forsake not the law of thy mother. Again, from the continuation of obeying both the father and the mother, no preference here. It's parents in general as they exercise authority over the child. And it's to listen to both of them. And there's consequences, again, of this. And let's go over here to Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30 and 17. The eye that mocketh at his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it. Again, the disobedience and the consequences of disrespect as far as how they are laid out under the law and the seriousness of the Old Testament and what we see in the home. And let's go over to the New Testament now and see what it says here in the New Testament about in 2 Timothy 3:2. Let's go to there first. We go back to 2 Timothy and chapter 3, verse 2. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. And before I say comment about it, let's go over to Romans 1:30. In Romans chapter 1, verse 30. Backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. And just gives you the context in these list of things that reflect on the ungodly, it puts in that same classification, disobedience to parents. And it really is a sign of ungodliness in this as it goes through. These are just lists of those things that reflect upon the ungodly and how they treat their parents. And that, you know, from the same thing that we see here, is the same thing as it applies, that if it is reflecting those who are ungodly, it should not be in us as a Christian home, and what it should reflect of us as it reflects here on those who are on the ungodly. Now, let's go ahead and go on here and look at Luke. Luke 12. In Luke chapter 12, and I'll read 51 through 53. Suppose ye that I am come to give peace on earth. I tell you, nay, but rather division. For from henceforth there shall be five in one house, divided, three against two, and two against three. The father shall be divided against the son against the father, and the mother against the daughter, and daughter against the mother, and mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And before I comment here, this is 14:26 of Luke. And if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Again, it's from the perspective, there is a reason for disobedience to occur. It's when it's opposite and contradicts being obedient to what God would want happen in people's lives. That you not forsake anything and not put anything between you and being obedient to following Christ. So there is a limit to what it can replace here as far as being disobedient, not obeying, is that there is something ungodly that stands, you know, what is said here in Christ's own words, from the fact that if it's going to stand between that something in the family relationship puts a barrier between you and being obedient to Christ, that is a time when it's okay to be disobedient and put Christ first in the priority in a life and being a follower of Christ and pursuing that. So there is a motive for that, or I should say there is a limit to what we can see in the child's obedience if it is contrary to God's law in a relationship as far as what might be stopping that from happening. So the motive here is, if we go back to Colossians now, ultimately what we see here, we've covered a lot of things as far as children obeying your parents in all things, no exception, in all situations except for the fact of disobedience or a barrier between them and responding and following Christ. But finally, the way it finishes up here, it says, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. The whole motivation behind this is that it's well-pleasing to the Lord. It's not because you have to do it, you know, disgruntling, and that you're just grit your teeth and, yeah, I'll do it today. No. This is supposed to be, and as I said, the disobedience reflects ungodliness. Well, this obedience that we see, where we're obeying in all things, is from the perspective is it's well-pleasing to the Lord, and it does reflect the godliness that's within us, is being obedient to the parents. So we can see here, let's go on now to the parents. In 3:21, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. And we can go over to Ephesians 6:4. In the parallel passage again, it says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It's not one-sided. It's not that one thing. This is a relationship here, and it's a dual part as far as that. It's very clear here what the Lord knows in our, what the word and what God has identified in our flesh as men in the household and as fathers. It knows right away what that apt and what we're a tendency to do is from the fact that is warning against, is obeying, or I should say, is provoking not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. It is a relationship, and father here really does apply, even though the word father, it is general in nature as far as the word that's used, as far as parents, and what it's telling us here is not to provoke, and it's from the perspective is not to exasperate them, not to stir up or not to irritate or nag, as far as what they can see in people in the children and how they treat the children, and as far as, you know, what as parents they might be apt to do, and not provoking their children to anger, as far as not provoking them or stirring up or irritating them, lest they be discouraged, as far as being discouraged or despaired is the response that you would get. But we do know in Hebrews 12, not to give the children a free ticket here. If we go back to Hebrews 12 and read 5 through 11, we know there is a requirement that the parents have just as Christ has in our lives, as the Lord does with us being Christians, is the same applies to the parental rule, is 5 through 11 of Hebrews chapter 12, and ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence, shall we not much more be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Again, the chastening in the life that we have is parents are still responsible for discipline in the home. Just as Christ works in our life, as the Lord works to chasten us, to correct us, the parents still have the responsibility for correction. So not to the point where, as it says here, the warning provoke not your children to anger. That does not mean that you don't keep them in line, as the word chastise there, or chasten them, is just to make sure that you have the correction needed in their lives and instruction that's needed. But it is to the point where you go over that. Now, what are some areas that we can see here of things that can discourage? And a couple of items that I found listed in the guide that I was using is one is overprotection is one thing a parent can be, is overprotective and not allowing any flexibility in the child and believe nothing they do and behaviors are relevant. So they might end up in rebellion under that, is that the child has no liberty and there's never a trust moment as far as the child learning. That they provide rules and guidelines, but they have to communicate them. The other is favoritism, where there's a comparison against others as far as the child not being good enough and using them as a standard, it ends up in a child being frustrated. Another is not giving the child any worth at all or any credit for what they're doing, that they actually end up feeling withdrawn and not feeling important. The goals being unrealistic, setting exceedingly high standards that not just for the effort they're doing, but for going beyond what anybody can achieve as a goal. The affection shown that we have for our children is to communicate the love to a child, and for those who don't display affection, the needs that a child has in providing the bare necessities in a child from a parental relationship, and the fact that they have clean clothes and meals and food to eat, and not being providing for that. Standards is just the opposite of being overprotective, but the lack of discipline in the home as far as a child doing whatever they want and whatever they feel like. Being overly critical of a child and how they grow up and the environment they're given. Neglecting a child as far as just not being involved and letting in their life. Or just the abuse of discipline. And I covered that when we started this section as far as the world around us and the amount of abuse, of child abuse that's out there in the world today with the reporting. And I think I had statistics of about 6 million reports a year in just the U.S. of people reporting child abuse and being overly restrictive, as overly abusive, either verbal, emotional, or physical. So it's out there in the world where these things could come, which could cause the child to be discouraged. As it warns us here, is that they would be discouraged. But we have what's laid on here for us, and if we live out the context of where we're at, of putting on the new clothes, living a godlike life in godliness, putting off those things that represent ungodliness, as being disobedient to parents, it was listed in those things as ungodly. We have all the tools we need. It's not like we have to be psychological PhDs to understand what's needed in a home. We have the scripture, and living a godlike life and living out these godly qualities will bring to bear all those things that are up there. And it tells us over in Ephesians 6:4, the other thing it mentions is the fact that but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Is the training they need, the instruction they need, the discipline is all within the Lord, and we have all that's needed within the Lord to meet those, is on how we would bring them up. And following these guidelines, you have all that you need to be able to live out and have and raise godly children, and the Lord working, at least in the home place. Let's move on. Enough about the home, as far as the wives, the husbands, the children. Now let's move on to the workplace and the masters and servants and what it says here in verse 22. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men please, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. Again, what we see here is obedience again, just emphasized, and it's a continuous submission to what we would consider the earthly authority, not the government, as I read before in Romans 13, but there's another earthly authority that God tells us to submit to in being obedient, and that's our employee, the employer, the employer that we work for, as we would say here, servant master, as it's used as a basis, but as it applies in the world, is a continuous submission to our earthly master in the employer relationship. And let's go back to Ephesians and read what this has. Again, in Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall receive of the Lord, whether be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same thing unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. We see here the relationship that's laid out. Even when we read through, and we got to remember, when Paul wrote this, you know, he wrote Ephesians, Colossians, and Philemon from the Roman prison. He was in prison when he wrote these words, and even then he wrote to Onesimus in the book of Philemon from the fact that he needed to give back to his master, Philemon, what he was due, and to receive, and asked also Philemon to receive this slave with kindness. And it doesn't give us an option here. It says, obey in all things your masters. And just to step aside here, the context of the slave versus the master, I think it should go to show that whatever the situation we're in, and some of us might feel that way in the workplace that we're in, as far as the type of treatment that you might have, but it should be irrelevant. And I know Pastor uses the words, you should never respond under the circumstances as a Christian, as far as, well, I'm doing fine under the circumstances. There are no circumstances. It's because God has placed us wherever you are. It's the fulfillment of his will in the situations that we're in the workplace we're in the church we're in the neighborhood we're in. If we're obedient to the will of God, he's placed us in those situations, and to accept it for that, it should be irrelevant what our social situation is in the workplace. And here it's even masters and slaves, but it says, obey in all things your masters. And it doesn't matter if you're slave or free, that what you should be obeying, the relationship should still be godly and maintaining that standard and not doing the duty, you know, with that reluctant attitude and grit your teeth and just grumble through it. That's not the attitude, because we see here in Ephesians, it's from this perspective of, as the servants of Christ. It says we are serving Christ in our master, which is the workplace. The master, our employer, is we should be reflecting what Christ would have us to do. It's for the Lord, and we should be doing it that we are honoring him in high regard and serving the master as they would be the Lord himself. It doesn't give us an option. Now let's go back here to 1 Timothy. In 1 Timothy 6:1. Let as many masters as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, that the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed. It's warning us that obedience and the honor that we are supposed to give and what we are supposed to honor them with, their own masters, worthy of all honor. They are worthy of the honor. It doesn't seem they deserve it, but they are worthy of it because Scripture tells us they are. Not because they earned that honor, but that they are they are worthy of it from the fact that they are our masters, and that the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed. Again, the contrast is made of the ungodly versus the godly. And it's right here, is to honor the master is a godly reflection of what we should show versus ungodly, which would reflect the fact that they do not honor it and what we should be doing. So we need to be aware of the testimony we have in the workplace. And let's go over to 1 Peter, in 1 Peter 2. In 1 Peter 2, verses 18 through 20. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to be the good and gentle, but also the forward. For this is thankworthy, if a man of conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it, if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently? But if when ye do well and suffer for it, ye take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. It's easy to be responsive and honor thy master when you're in a good situation. It's even harder if they don't deserve that respect. But again, it's stressing here because they know, and the Lord, when these words were written, they know in the Word that these situations are going to occur for Christians, the good and the bad. But there's no choice for us on how we respond. It says from the fact that we need to deserve, they deserve the respect in either situation. And no matter how they would respond or how we be treated, and that this is acceptable with God, is that we treat them that way. And the other thing that we see back in Colossians, well, it says both in Colossians and Ephesians 6, from the perspective of, not with eye service. And what we see here in Colossians 3:22, it says not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. It's not just for the point where you're promoting yourself. That's not the workplace and what it's trying to say here. When somebody's looking, you do the right thing. But yet when the boss is away, everybody's off doing their own thing. That's not the reflection as a Christian we're supposed to have, or that we do something just to get noticed and helpfully to benefit from it personally. Is as men pleasers, to promote oneself above somebody else. That's not the place we have. God's going to provide the increase. God's going to provide the treasure or the response of what we get from the actions that we have in this world. He'll provide our compensation eternally as Christians. So from the perspective here is we're not supposed to be doing things from the perspective of, well, as just for men, as men pleasers, and the fact that we do it for just eye service, but in fearing God and singleness of heart, and knowing that we receive our reward or inheritance for we serve the Lord Christ, and not the fact that, we do it for the wrong reasons. But the positive side of things that we see here is two reasons that slave obeys their masters in what we see here. One is that we repay them for their faithfulness. We endure the iniquity now, and that our earthly master or boss may not give the servant as far as the things that we deserve, but the Lord will, as far as the compensation that we get, is our eternal treasures. And, we'll get to the earthly master here, too, as far as being a Christian. But the other thing is, from the fact of the negative side, is, the Lord does not have, or it does not discipline without partiality as far as disobedience that we would have. So there's two aspects here. One is we are faithful to our earthly master, to our employer, from the perspective that we know that we have our eternal treasures hidden in heaven for us eternally. And whatever we have here in a temporal and an earthly response is we should already be satisfied with, because we have the eternal glory for us available. But on the flip side, we also know that we need to be obedient, and something that's being disobedient from the fact that we are not reflecting a godly attitude. So there's two aspects to this that we have to keep in mind. One is the reasons that we obey our masters is because we already have our eternal compensation. And secondly is, because it's obedience to the Lord. And moving on to the masters now, and finishing up here in verse 25 before we move on, but he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done. And there is no respect of persons. And which is the point I was just making here, is that we have our eternal compensation already taken care of. So even though if we're treated the wrong way, it doesn't matter how we respond to the Lord. Is we have what we deserve for eternity, and we shouldn't be upset with what we don't think we should get now in this world today, and that we should look for the eternal value of things that we have. But finally here, the other thing that we see is masters. Masters, give unto your servants that which is just and equal, knowing that ye also have a master in heaven. Is, you know, God will judge those who mistreat. And if it's slaves here, and the master-slave or the employer-employee, you know, if you feel wronged, God will ultimately judge. We know that he will judge those for what they've done. And he will judge those who treat or mistreat the employees in the workplace. And Ephesians 6:9, what I have already read in the employee-employer relationship, is talks about the master and says, ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, and neither is a respect of persons with him. We're not supposed to have the authoritarian attitude as Christian employers, that those that are the managers, those that are the employers, they are not supposed to have the authoritative type of the threats and the abusive relationship, inconsiderate. As it says here in verse 9, it says, do the same things, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, and that you're not supposed to have that relationship with inconsiderate and threatening to get people to respond. And on the flip side, is as far as what it says here, neither is there respect of persons with him. Is we're not supposed to be treating favorites in the workplace, parting people against each other. Is as the managers or as supervisors or as owners or as employers in the business, the Christian response is to treat everybody equally, justice and grace in our attitude, and reflecting what God would have us do, and that everybody gets treated fairly and equally and not under the threat of abusive relationship of being inconsiderate in how we treat people and how we expecting the results to be accomplished from what God would have be accomplished. And it's not in our own efforts anyway. You know, even though you're in the workplace, doesn't bring you outside of God's will being accomplished. Yeah, we put our part into every day and contribute everything that we need to do and the effort that we are designed in our job descriptions and accomplishing. But ultimately, even in the workplace, God's will be accomplished. Either for advancement or either for what we get accomplished, the success, or whatever, it's still part of our life and that experience we have under God's control. And the balance that we can have as Christians where others around us, it can especially happen in the workplace, that others would fret and frail, not that we don't do our jobs and just sit back and let the Lord work through it all. No, we contribute our part, but we don't have to fret about the outcomes. Because it's within the Lord's control, and in whatever we would accomplish, that we do it in the Lord's might anyway. And whatever, if there is something that goes wrong in a workplace, it's a learning experience. To mark it up and chart it up against the Lord would want us to learn something out of that and apply it to either our spiritual lives as far as how we would become more conformed to his image. So, and it's the attitude in the workplace in today's stress-filled environment of people being cut back and everybody asked to do more with less resources, from the fact that we can still have balance, a soberness of mind, in accomplishing what the Lord would have us to do, given the best of our ability, but from the perspective that we obey and being obedient to our employer in as he were Christ himself, that we are serving the Lord because that's what we are doing. So we can really display this attitude that we have in our Christian life, both in the home, as far as we have with the mother, the father, the parents, the children, and then in the workplace with the employee and the employer, really reflecting what God would have us to put on in this new person, these clothes, and to put them on and taking off the old, is living that godly life is life-changing to those around us and would be dramatic to be able to display that type of attitude in the world today, you know, considering all that we had looked at as far as the condition of the world around us and being a Christian that's obedient to the Lord in the instruction that we're given here in Colossians and putting on those clothes is all you need. And trust me, people will notice the difference in your life. The results would be dramatic. And just think of that light. If Christians were obedient to that degree in this world and that example that was set, the lights that were shining in this dark world, what a difference that would make for people to be attracted to what Christ would be and being imitators of him. And we know that as we're instructed here, as far as what we are supposed to be doing, is the contrast is always made between the godly and the ungodly. What reflects those things that are ungodly, what's supposed to be reflective of us as godly, and that it is to be a difference. They don't make those contrasts in the Word of God just from the fact of it's there. No, it's from the fact to emphasize the point that we are different from the world. And there are things that reflect those that are ungodly and those things that we are supposed to be putting on and being a peculiar people, called out to be holy and acceptable unto him. And that we need to remember that each and every day as we go on and live out this life and how we are supposed to communicate with the world and what we're supposed to reflect. So we'll be moving on in 2 weeks. Next week is the July 2nd. We'll have evening service next week. But we have a video that we're going to show next Sunday night on the life of, it's a documentary. It's on the life of Francis Scott Key. And it's interesting as far as how he came about and more of the background of his life, how he encountered being at the right moment at the right time, experiencing that off the coast of Fort McHenry in Baltimore